Zechariah chapter 9, an oracle. The word of Yahweh is against the land of Hadrach and will rest upon Damascus, for the eye of man and of all the tribes of Israel is toward Yahweh. Well, I think what we're going to be reading here is a prophecy of how Alexander the Great of Macedon, or Greece, was going to come and destroy and conquer all the nations around Judah. Now, Zechariah is prophesying at the time of the restoration when some of the Jews in Babylon and Persia had returned, but they weren't being very zealous in getting on and rebuilding the temple and re-establishing God's kingdom. They were mixing with the nations around them, and they were intermarrying with them, as Ezra and Nehemiah record. And so this chapter is saying, look, you're intermarrying with these people who are going to be destroyed. There's this Alexander the Great who's going to come and wipe out all these peoples. So Hamath, which borders on it, Tyre and Sidon, who are very wise. Tyre built herself a stronghold, heaped up silver like dust and fine gold like the mud of the streets. The Lord will dispossess her, and he will strike her power in the sea, and she will be devoured with fire. Well, this is what was done by Alexander the Great. So having talked about Hamath, Tyre, Sidon, Ashkelon will see it and fear, Gaza will writhe in agony, as will Ekron. Well, if you look at the order of the cities that are going to fall, Damascus, Hamath, Tyre, Sidon, Ashkelon, Gaza, Ekron, this is exactly the path taken by Alexander the Great when he invaded this area. So it was the people, for example, from these places who were intermarrying with the people of Judah who had returned. Foreigners will dwell in Ashdod. Well, it was the people of Ashdod who intermarried with the Jews, and it's actually recorded that the children they had couldn't really speak Hebrew. They spoke the language of Ashdod. And this prophecy is saying, look, all these people are going to be destroyed. Don't get involved with them. And that is, I think, true for us in our lives. Look, all around us is all going to come to nothing. Don't intermarry with them. Don't get involved in their ways. Rejoice greatly, daughter of Zion. Shout, daughter of Jerusalem. Behold, your king comes to you. He is righteous and having salvation, humble, riding on a donkey, even on a colt, the foal of a donkey. So I think it's saying that, look, if you're faithful, at this time, when all the other nations are cut off, your messianic king could come to you. Now, that didn't happen, as I say, because they insisted on mixing with these nations who were to be destroyed. And yet this finally came true in Jesus, and these words are quoted, aren't they, about when Jesus entered the temple and entered into Jerusalem, riding on a donkey. And it says that this great king will be humble, riding on a donkey. That was pretty hard for people in those days to understand, because the idea of a humble king was sort of a contradiction. A king was proud. A king didn't ride on a donkey, let alone on a young donkey that hadn't yet been broken in, that was darting and jumping all over the place, trying to throw him off her back. No, a king rode in on a great charger, on a great war horse. The fact that Jesus rode into Jerusalem on a young donkey that was not yet broken in, that is, it was trying to throw him off her back, and it was not a very sort of lordly procession, not a great powerful display of strength, not at all. This is typical of God, the humble king. This is typical of how he works, that his son was humble. You see there again and again how God inverts, turns upside down all the human ideas that, you know, I want to be powerful, I want to be proud, I want to show off that I'm the king. But no, Jesus is the humble king. Understand why Zephaniah says, seek humility. Seek to be humble. Have humility as something you really would like to aspire to. I will cut off the chariot from Ephraim and the horse from Jerusalem, and the battle bow will be cut off. In other words, all the chariots and horses against my people will be cut off. He will speak peace to the nations. His dominion will be from sea to sea and from the river to the ends of the land. As for you also, because of the blood of your covenant, I have set free your prisoners from the pit in which is no water. Turn to the stronghold, you prisoners of hope. Even today I declare that I will restore double to you. For indeed I bend Judah as a bow for myself. I have filled the bow with Ephraim. I will stir up your sons Zion against your sons Greece, and will make you like the sword of a mighty man. So the idea was that although Alexander was going to have all these victories, there could have arisen a messianic leader who would have given Judah victory against Alexander. But that didn't happen at the time, but as I say, it was all fulfilled in Jesus, and it will be even more powerfully fulfilled when he returns to establish his kingdom. Yahweh will be seen over them. His arrow will go flashing like lightning, and the Lord will blow the trumpet and will go with whirlwinds of the south. Yahweh of armies will defend them, and they will destroy and overcome with sling stones, and they will drink and roar as through wine. Yahweh their God will save them in that day as the flock of his people, for they are like the jewels of a crown lifted on high over his land. How great is his goodness, and how great is his beauty! Grain will make the young men flourish, and new wine the virgins. So God's people will be like the jewels of a crown. In Malachi, he uses the same idea, that we are God's peculiar treasure. We are jewels. We are valuable to him. And that is how we are, that we are of special interest to him. Oh, look at my diamond ring. That is my most precious possession. A woman may feel, or a man may feel, that a certain wedding ring that he's got, that this is my most valuable possession. This is how God, the God of the cosmos, the God of everything, feels about you and me. This is amazing, that we are not alone, that we are significant to him.